We're back to the Lara Coates Show, only on Sirius XM Urban View.
Welcome back to Lara Coates Show here on Sirius XM Urban View. We're talking powers and becomes action. You know, it has been a very trying week for people, a very taxing time. The news that you're hearing, the stress, the energy, the reporting, the personal issues you may be facing. You never know. We talk about it often on the show. You never know what people are enduring or going through in their lives. And, you know, sometimes when the fixation is on the external, we spend too little time, and we should do more, on what's going on the inside. And there's this really great book, a really great book that I have been finding so useful. It's called Widen the Window, Training Your Brain and Body to Thrive During Stress and Recover from Trauma. And it's written by Dr. Elizabeth Stanley, who is a Georgetown professor and U.S. Army veteran who served as an Army intelligence officer in Asia, Europe, and on two Balkans deployment. And Dr. Stanley actually suffered from PTSD, temporarily losing her sight after a series of traumatic episodes, and had a near-death experience during combat to try to shed intel on the current situation going on in Iran. And it really has helped me in thinking about ways and simple techniques to help cope with stress and perhaps anxiety you may be feeling at time to time, and that she really taught herself in many respects. And her life's work is now teaching others and the military, by the way, as well as civilians. And she has been one of the pioneering researchers in the areas of stress and trauma. And she's here today to share the tools that she has used to heal and to thrive from perhaps frightening thoughts you may be having or feelings that we're all suffering from. And this book, Widen the Window, Training Your Brain and Body to Thrive During Stress and Recover from Trauma, will really help everyone who is concerned about so many different aspects, from the rising tensions in the Middle East to coping with fears during a nerve-wracking or scary time. And it's her firsthand experience that really can ground this conversation. Welcome to the show, Dr. Elizabeth Stanley. I'm happy to have you here today. Thank you.
Laura, thank you so much for having me on, and please call me Liz.
Can I call you Dr. Liz? It seems so cool. No, call me Liz. Got it. Roger that. I got it. Liz, I'm so glad that you are here, although you can go to her website at elizabeth-stanley.com. But Liz, I'm glad you're here to talk about this because, you know, first of all, we are hearing and learning more and more information about traumatic brain injuries that are may have been suffered from up to 50 servicemen and women in the Iran missile attack. And we're hearing, of course, about, we know, PTSD and the way that mental health is becoming more a part of the conversation, not just in the military, but among civilians as well. And we all find ourselves talking about divisive rhetoric and stressful times and how politics is driving people crazy and making people just anxious, let alone what's happening in their own personal lives that have nothing to do with what you're seeing on television. Tell me a little bit about your background that led you to really honing in on what you could do about stress and trauma.
Well, like many of us, I experienced aspects of a traumatic childhood, and it happened, like many of us happened, while my brain and body were still being wired, which, when we're not aware of it, can lead to lifelong effects in how our brains and bodies can cope with stress and trauma. And in my case, it set my mind and body in a way that it both attracted more traumatic events to me, and it gave me less capacity to be able to recover from them. And because I come from a long military lineage, I'm the ninth generation in my family to serve in the U.S. Army, actually. It had been intergenerational. A lot of this came from parents and grandparents and, you know, being passed through, as it often does. And I learned to cope the way many of us in our culture cope, which is by powering through, you know, putting it aside, compartmentalizing it, and keep going. And I was a compulsive overachiever. I mean, that's how I dealt with it. But all of it was being stored in my body. I had turned stress on without turning it off. And eventually, after my near-death experience in Bosnia, when I was in graduate school, all of it started coming out sideways in my body, in physical illnesses, in PTSD and depression, and eventually, as you mentioned, in losing my eyesight. It's turned out I had Lyme disease, and I'd had it for a decade, but no one knew, and it's never been treated. And it was, in some ways, like a metaphoric frying pan upside my head. I mean, when you lose your eyes and you can't see and you're trying to be a professor, it's enough to catch your attention. And that's what it took in my case. And, you know, there's some other people where it's clear their life is on this trajectory, they're doing really well, and then something goes off the rails. And this is often the wake-up call that many of us need. And the reason I wrote this book is so that people don't have to have that life off the rails moment, so that we can learn new ways of working with it as we're moving through life, so that we're, instead of always turning stress on without turning it off, we can do some simple steps to help turn the stress off and recover our minds and bodies.
So it's interesting, before we get to the steps, it's interesting to think about the idea of the physical manifestations of stress and how we are redirecting our thoughts and thinking, well, it can't be this, it must be something. And I find that perhaps some people are just are hoping or thinking, I'm not hoping, but thinking that the physical aspect of it is all there is. And they're not scratching the surface as to why this is happening. And I'm finding so much in my life of how your body is reacting to what's going on emotionally. And did that, so for you, it started even before you were in military service. But tell us about this near-death experience you had in Bosnia.
So I was part of the first group of Americans and NATO forces into Bosnia after the Dayton Peace Treaty was signed in 1995. And I was at the time, without being aware of it, speaking of bodies carrying it and we're not connecting the dots, I had double pneumonia, but I didn't know it. So I'm really sick. I'm working 120-hour weeks. I'm learning a new foreign language, and I'm commanding a bunch of people and getting us ready to deploy in the role I was in at that time. And working 7 days a week, I'm pushing my body through. I'm coughing, but I'm not thinking about it. I ran a convoy of 100 vehicles through Hungary and Croatia into Bosnia. And on our convoy, we had an accident, and some vehicles through the ice, like, crashed into buildings. Long story short, we got stuck on the side of the road in 3 feet of snow for multiple days, and I'm still sick, and I'm in charge of all these people that were in the snow. And eventually we get into Bosnia, and we're clearing a building to create space to put up some tents. And we're moving lots of pieces of rebar and concrete, and, you know, because the building had been bombed. And the concrete dust on top of that amount of exhaustion and this pneumonia I wasn't aware of, I stopped breathing completely, and I had to be medevaced by helicopter to a UN hospital and resuscitated. It was not combat, clearly not combat, but it was, on one hand, it seems like, oh, well, you know, that's just a physical thing. Like, many of us are like, oh, it's just chronic pain, or, oh, it's just I'm gaining weight, or, oh, it's just sleep problems, I'm not sleeping so well, or, oh, it's, you know, just, yeah, I'm drinking more caffeine than usual, or more alcohol, or whatever it is. We don't connect the dots to how all of this is connected. Now, the way that our brain processes pain, both physical pain, emotional pain, social pain, it's all done in the same distress network in the brain. And so it can come out sideways in this way. And it's a very common way in our culture for unresolved stress to show up, because we have developed these amazing habits for writing it off as no big deal. In fact, you sort of said something to that effect earlier in our conversation, Laura, when you said, people who are watching the news right now, it might not be as extreme as the things you went through, Liz. And when we do that, we all do that. We have this habit of making these comparisons. Well, you know, I haven't been raped, or I haven't been in combat. And we think that that's helping us with our stress and helping us make it better. Actually, ironically, it's making it worse, because while that's helping our thinking brain to understand and maybe give some context to it, it's not getting at the part of the brain that actually controls whether the stress is turned on or off. That part of the brain, the survival part of the brain, it can't understand and work with those kind of recontextualizations. So the program I've designed is really to help get at the survival brain being able to recover so that we can turn the stress off. And that's not through these comparisons. It's not through positive thinking. It's not through being able to, you know, see the forest for the trees, it's through where we direct our attention. Because where our attention is directed, consciously or unconsciously, it's having these tremendous ripple effects throughout our brain and our body.
You know, how do we get there? I mean, I'm talking to Elizabeth Stanley, who's written this book, Widen the Window, Training Your Brain and Body to Thrive During Stress and Recover from Trauma. And you do talk a lot about the idea in the book of that many people believe that stress and worry and anxiety are all different, so you need different strategies. But you argue against this, and you talk about really the coping mechanisms and the tools you actually need. Walk us through some of the different strategies we could all employ to really widen the window.
Absolutely. So the window is how well our thinking brain and these other unconscious survival parts of our brain are working together in any moment. And when we have been stressed a long time, their relationships become very antagonistic. Instead, we need to train ourselves through where we're directing our attention, through how we're choosing to spend our time, to help the survival brain feel safe enough that it will turn on all of the recovery functions that we naturally have innately wired in us, but that most of us are blocking from happening. So one very easy thing to do is, and it sounds so simple, but there's a lot of scientific evidence in our research, our published neuroscience research about this with combat troops preparing for Iraq and Afghanistan. Directing our attention in ways that help the survival brain feel safe and grounded, that is what allows us to turn on these recovery functions. And the best, most portable place for directing our attention, we always have it with us at any time, is the contact of our body in contact with our surroundings. So while we're sitting here, you know, talking, you can be feeling your butt in, this sounds so silly, but feeling your butt in the chair, not thinking about it, but feeling it, really feeling the pressure and the weightedness, the heat, the softness or hardness, the dampness, all of the different sensations that come with contact. That actually is cueing those oldest parts of our brain to feel grounded, and that is the posture we need to not add any more new stress and to recover from the stressive experience. So that's one thing we can do. And I have a 5-minute audio exercise that you can download off my website to be able to practice this every day. The exercise is called Contact Points. It's where we're in contact with things. And when we do that all the time, then when we're in the middle of a really stressful interaction, or we overhear some really painful news, or we're watching some really challenging news on the news, we can, even as we're taking in this threatening or challenging information, our survival brain can still know it has this home base, this anchor, so that we're not having our minds and bodies begin to spiral up with more stress. That's one thing. A second thing is getting enough sleep. And the most recent research, I have a chapter that looks at all of this research. This recent research is really showing we need about 8 hours every night. The old idea that we just sleep in on the weekends and make up for it, the research clearly shows that is not true. And chronic sleep deprivation, in terms of how it's having effects on our willpower, on our cognitive capabilities, anything less than, anything around 6 hours a night for a couple weeks on end, that is enough to be impaired all the time. So getting enough sleep, part of it is helping to keep the thinking brain off sleeping so that the survival brain can turn on a lot of those long-term repair and recovery functions that we can't do while we're awake. So sleep is a big one. A third one is recognizing how much what we are in contact with in our surroundings, we're always resonating with our surroundings. If we're surrounded by anxious and irritated and upset people, and we're not conscious of it, we will pick that up from them because of these unconscious stress and emotion contagion things that are the way that we're wired. But the flip side of that, understanding how much we're affected by our surroundings, spending some time outdoors in nature every day if you can, or at least a couple times a week, spending time with your loved ones, people where you really have a connected relationship. These things help our systems to reset. So it doesn't have to be we can fit it into a really busy day. We can still make some choices and, you know, getting enough sleep and spending a little bit of time where we are around environments that help our systems feel safe and grounded.
You know, as a parent, Liz, I'm always thinking about, and you mentioned the idea of, if you are around these sort of contagions, stress contagions, it can have a detrimental effect on yourself and other people around you. And I always think to myself, you know, I have two children, and so I've got these two sets of eyes that are always watching me. And I'm finding myself, even when I am stressed and in stressful situations, trying to be cognizant of what my children are seeing. And I never know if I'm supposed to show the stress and they learn from the resilience of it, or if I should mask it to protect them in some way. You write about this and the effect that parents can have on their kids' own experience with stress or anxiety or depression and trauma. What can, as a parent, what can we do to help sort of set conditions for our kids to build some resilience?
Laura, this is such a great question, because we as children, when we were children ourselves, our own minds and bodies were wired in our social environment from our parents. And most of our parents were not nearly as aware of these effects as I think we are today. So I think it's a great question of, if we're masking it, is that actually helping? Ironically, no, masking it isn't, because when we're masking it, that stress is still inside us. We might not be projecting it outward, but our minds and bodies are still activated. Our heart rate is still up and we're still experiencing physical activation. Their survival brain is picking up on our activation. And if what we're saying, we're showing a happy face and we're saying, oh, everything's fine, kids, and we're like, so the narrative is it's all okay, but underneath their survival brains are picking up all of this activation. That actually is much worse for children than if we are able to, with some amount of calmness, acknowledge, yes, I'm really sad right now. And I'm sad, you know, you don't have to give the whole story, but I'm sad for, you know, one sentence answer. And while we're sad, you know, that feels like this. And that helps us teach their minds and bodies that it's okay to express emotions, because emotions are a very important way that our survival brain communicates with us and helps us communicate with the loved ones and other people around us. But it also helps them to see we can experience intense things and we can move through it and recover. And their bodies and minds are learning that wave, that kind of you go through stress and you recover from it. They learn that. They pick that up off of us. That is the way the wiring works. So when we block it in ourselves, we're actually stunting their brains and bodies from learning how to do it. And we're kind of creating some amount of crazy making, because the narrative on top is that everything's fine, but we see underneath it really isn't. That was certainly a big part of my experience growing up in an alcoholic household. And, you know, on the surface, it sounded like everything was fine, but underneath, our minds and bodies knew it wasn't really safe. So when we can begin to create that congruence, that allows for the good aspects of our social wiring to really blossom. And that's an important thing for training brains to be able to cope with adversity throughout life.
You know, it's such an important thing that you've said, and the idea, and it's so instructive, and the idea of, you know, I often say I love my children, but I'm raising adults. I'm raising them into adults, and I'm raising them to become something different than what they are. I mean, I want them to be themselves, but I'm not trying to just have them be in a childhood indefinitely, but I do want them to have the skills and the joys and the resilience. And it's a very challenging, and it's the greatest joy for me ever. But I'm always looking for tools, and your book, Widen the Window, does that, not just for in terms of parents or just in terms of servicemen and women in the military. It's really for everyone about this. And my last question to you, Liz, is, you know, it might seem counterintuitive for people to think about the ideas of emotional well-being and mental health and tying it to science. But you go to great lengths to ensure that this is instructive and that you rely on the science. Why is that so important in this overall journey and quest for people?
Thank you so much for asking that question. When I was coping with the fallout of my own unresolved stress and trauma, you know, the worst of that point where I was coping with depression and PTSD and losing my eyesight and all of these problems with my lungs, I really wanted to understand why all this had happened. Why did I have all these events in my life? And for me, learning the science of the neurobiology of how all of this worked, to understand how much this was completely unconscious wiring and conditioning, that it started before I was even born, while I was in the womb, and had been playing out, it helped me take it so much less personally, and it helped me to quiet all of the self-judgment and the shame that I felt about what was happening in my life. And so I needed the science to understand it, but then I realized there is a power for our thinking brains in understanding how this works, because no one gave us a manual when we started growing up for how survival brains are moving through the world and why we're having stress and emotions and why these things are actually helpful for us. That's not part of our common cultural narrative. So I wanted to really share cutting-edge research. I mean, I do it with my story and the stories of men and women I train, so it isn't like dense science. I really try and animate it. But I want people to understand it so that they can begin to realize if things up to this point have been really sucky, it's not necessarily because they were broken or bad or wrong or damaged. It's been conditioning playing out, often from many generations, and that we have leverage points. We have choice in working with it differently. It all works very lawfully, and once you understand how the sort of laws of it work, the natural laws of it work, we have new choice points to interrupt it and to have it be different. And that's why I shared so much science, and I really want it to help people.
And you have, and this is an incredible book, it's called Widen the Window, Training Your Brain and Body to Thrive During Stress and Recover from Trauma. It's written by Dr. Elizabeth Stanley. You can follow her. You can go to her website at elizabeth-stanley.com. Thank you for this book, Widen the Window, and thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Laura. It was such a pleasure chatting with you today.